Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Good Tuesday afternoon, and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. We'll be taking you up to 6:30 today. We're excited to let you know that even though we won't have Austin Ekeler on the program for his normal 5 o'clock appointment on Tuesday today, he will be with us tomorrow at 5 o'clock right here on The Fan. Schedule's off a bit. The lads are getting ready for the Philadelphia Eagles over in Ashburn this week.
Yeah, the short turnaround, man. It is right back to work, and it's not a cupcake. It's not directional Michigan coming to town. It's the team you're now looking up at in the standings who's playing their best football.
A lot to get into today. We've got to start right off the top by letting you know that it is a Survivor Tuesday on Grant and Danny. You can go vote right now at facebook.com/Grant and Danny. You're kicking a player off the island. You're giving a player immunity. You guys know the drill. We've been playing Commanders Survivor since it was Redskin Survivor. Years and years of this game on this show where every single week you kick a player off the island and you keep somebody around, whether they had a good game or not. The way this theoretically should work is whoever has the worst game gets sent home. Whoever has the best game gets immunity. Terry McLaurin is immune based on last week. He had 2 touchdowns. This week, 5 catches for 113 yards. He'd be a candidate for immunity again.
He'd be just fine.
But you can't be immune 2 straight weeks. So you're voting 4 different players on offense, 3 different players on defense, and 1 specialist. Here is who is eligible to be voted for today. Jaden Daniels, Austin Ekeler, or Sam Cosmi on offense can be sent home or given immunity. On defense, Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, and Jeremy Chin. And then specialist Austin Seibert, the kicker, who didn't kick this past week. I would say he is probably going to be voted off today based on the recent trend where you guys boot whoever's hurt and unavailable off the island.
He has had a fantastic season. He's done more than you could possibly have hoped for. Didn't play in the game.
What if he survives?
It'd be unbelievable.
I mean, last week, B-Rob, who couldn't play in a game because he was hurt, got sent home because he wasn't available, and you guys did the can't win Survivor in the tub bit.
I know that this is way more interesting sometimes to me than it is to folks that are just minding their business, living their lives. But in years past, it wasn't until you got down to like week 16 where it was a hard choice. Now it's nothing but hard choices. It's a byproduct of how much better this is.
I think immunity is actually way more fascinating this week because some guys played well that are listed here, including Ekeler having 2 touchdowns, which is normally a one-way ticket to immunity. But Jeremy Chin had 2 takeaways.
He was great.
He had an interception. He had a fumble recovery on the goal line. So those are a couple of ideal options there. Cosmi was pretty good on the offensive line. Jaden Daniels did some decent things this week. Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu are always very solid, had some stellar moments. So it's up to you guys. Go vote facebook.com/Grant and Danny if you want to participate in Commander Survivor. Big news in the NFL is tangentially related to the Commanders in this regard. The Bears fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, today after just 10 months on the job. They are replacing him with Thomas Brown, set to take over. Thomas Brown was the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers last year when the number one overall pick, Bryce Young, fell on his face. So they are saying, Shane Waldron, you're doing a terrible job with the number one overall pick, and you're ruining his development. So they fired him to hire the guy to call the plays and run the offense for Caleb Williams, who called the plays and did that for Bryce Young last year.
Other than that,
the Bears are a complete disaster. And I think it's just a nice opportunity from D.C., looking from afar, Danny, to acknowledge that that used to be Washington, that very easily in a different era, in a different multiverse, with Dan Snyder still the owner here, would be the Commanders, where we're down on Jaden Daniels and the coordinators getting fired and everyone wants the head coach gone. And they did these things out of order where they should have let the GM pick a new head coach to pick his own quarterback, but they didn't do any of those things correctly. And now, the fact that it's not us, it's the Bears, bro, it feels good sitting here watching that.
It is nice. And they've got a competent GM, by the way, that's demonstrated competence, right? Where they've spun it and present assets for future stuff, added young talent, a bunch of picks.
He's made some good moves. This is not the mark of a good general manager, this situation.
Well, right, and that's where I was going to go. I mean, remember, this is the ultimate mea culpa here. I'm sitting there all offseason going, how could people not do what Chicago has done, surrounding this young player with all the talent, all the talent? And the thing I underestimated that I should have given more credit here in Washington and less credit there was you can add DJ Moore and Rome Odunze and Keenan Allen. That's nice. Now, Keenan Allen's not the same Keenan Allen. We're finding that out, I think, over the course of the season. But if it's Eberflus, Waldron, Thomas Brown, you can bring in Jerry Rice and Tim Brown and Terrell Owens, and you're not getting completing four passes. They look like they have never practiced offense when you watch them play.
They're bad.
It's horrendous. Everything is basically, all right, Caleb, survive. Good luck, man. Run around and see if you can make something happen.
So I want to get deeper into the comparison between what Washington did for Daniels and what the Bears did unsuccessfully for Williams in a minute. But just the details on the news here that they're moving on from Waldron. This is the first time that the Bears have made an in-season OC change since they first assigned the title offensive coordinator as an organization in 1970. They have not done this. They don't fire assistants, and really they don't like firing head coaches in season. It's just not their way. Caleb Williams was 16 for 30 on Sunday for 120 yards. And it was the second time this season, week one, he threw for 93 yards, where he went for 120 or fewer through the air. I went back and I watched that game on Sunday night just because I couldn't believe the box score. He got sacked 9 times. They were 1 for 14 on third down. That was their worst third down performance in 12 years. Whatever you think it sounds like, it was worse than that. Longest play of 12 yards. Couldn't string anything together. It was a disgusting offensive operation. He's been sacked 18 times in the last 3 weeks, Sam Howell-esque. The three highest pressured games of his season, all three of those were losses because the first of the three losses, remember, was here, the Hail Mary game. And over those three games, three L's, they have 27 total points and 277 yards per game, which was third lowest in the NFL during that span. If you look at their season rankings on offense, 24th in scoring, 28th in rushing, 30th in passing, 31st in overall offense, and 31st on third down. Completely broken. So now the question is it Caleb Williams? Is it just the coaching? Is it the play calling? Is it the personnel? How much of this does each person have to bear the brunt of? But yet Adam Schefter today publicly suggesting on ESPN that they at least considered benching Caleb Williams to go to Tyson Bagent. That was part of the last 48 hours was figuring out, do we stick with Williams right now or do we bench him?
Can you imagine?
Which I think is a joke. I mean, that's insane. But nothing they do makes sense, so I guess it shouldn't shock me that you would potentially bench the number one overall pick for Tyson Bagent halfway through his rookie season.
All the promise. And again, I'm still a Caleb Williams fan. It's fun now to jump off the bandwagon and people in New England, people here, and you know, even the small sample you got in Minnesota of J.J. McCarthy before he got hurt, or Bo Nix, what he's turned in. Everyone's loving to dunk at this point. Way too early to write an epitaph. Way too early to close the book on someone that's that talented in what we know is a rotten situation. Like, you don't fire an OC midway through this season of a rookie because everything's going great. You know what I mean? Like, it is clearly a mess there. So, still very, very, very bullish on Caleb Williams and his career and his ceiling and everything else. You saw some of those moments against Washington firsthand, for goodness sakes. They could do anything for 3.5 quarters, and all of a sudden, some of those, oh my God, he has it. He has the thing, as they marched down the field and scored a couple touchdowns late. But, man, oh man, is it a hot mess there. Like, it is, I feel bad for Chicago, because they're in the kind of that Washington, Cleveland, Detroit to a degree boat where they just simply have never had a good quarterback for most of their existence of their franchise. I know Detroit's had some more flirtations than others, but Chicago is Washington Northwest. Like, they have done that. They've had a lot of Jim McMahon, Eric Kramer nonsense forever where they just simply cannot get that position right. And when they think they've got it right, still things are going wrong, so terribly wrong here over the last few weeks.
Yeah, with Williams, I think everyone wants it to be either that he's bad or that he's a victim. Like this binary thing. And the answer is that both things can be true, which is to say that he's not bad, but he also isn't just a victim, that he is contributing to the problem. 9 sacks don't happen without your quarterback not helping you. And you see that. I think you saw it here in Washington, for those of you that paid close attention to that game. in a way that has not been the problem or the case with Jaden Daniels, who gets the ball out, who processes things very quickly. Williams loves to hold the football and occasionally makes incredible plays. You referenced one or two late in the game where he would, you know, kind of roll out. You know, he's rolling right, still rolling. He's at the sideline, throws back to the middle of the field, breaks like three rules in the process. First down, huge play. Now they're set up to go take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many times where that's the holding penalty that puts you behind the sticks because you put undue pressure on your line being somewhere where you weren't supposed to be, or where that is a, you know, sack that you took or an interception thrown against your body. The biggest difference between him and Daniels negatively this year, I would say, for Caleb Williams, is that Jaden Daniels does not look like a rookie very often. He does not make the catastrophic mistake. He does not put the ball in harm's way. He doesn't hold the ball and take the 15-yard sack that knocks you out of field goal range. Like those little tiny things that don't show up in the box score that are actually massive.
Yep.
Caleb Williams does those things constantly.
And it's in addition to that, it's the guys that have had great rookie seasons in this way that have gone on to great careers, think like Roethlisberger or Russell Wilson, and Jaden Daniels is not kind of doing the same thing. You're not getting the unbelievably prolific throwing totals that Baker Mayfield turned in or Justin Herbert turned in or CJ Stroud last year to a degree, but it's that trait. It's the sort of Alex Smithian rookie year where I'm making very mature. Now, Smith didn't have this his rookie year. He turned the ball over a ton, but I'm talking about later career Alex Smith where we might miss a couple things here and there philosophically, but I am not going to ruin it. I am not going to be catastrophic. I'm not going to make the horrible mistake. And it's, you know, the Cousins adage of going, you're not going broke taking a profit. You see these mature quarterback decisions from guys that are wise beyond their years to then build to maybe be more prolific one day.
Well, Daniels has also just been way more accurate too.
Yes.
I think that's a big key. You look at completion percentage, which doesn't tell the whole story, but tells some of it. But watch the games, it's going to tell you the same thing. I mean, Daniels is just a more accurate passer at this point of his career, or has been
more often for
this
sure,
season,
yeah.
Without question. Now, that's as much kind of kicking dirt on Caleb Williams as I'm going to do, as I'm willing to do right now, because there's also a lot of good. And my normal rookie axiom, my normal adage with rookie quarterbacks, which has now been kind of blown out of the water this year because Jaden Daniels is not a normal rookie. I expect the bad. The bad is normal. I just need enough good to feel like this guy's got the goods and can be the guy ultimately. And with Caleb Williams, I think he's on track and showing that. Like, there are some spectacular plays and some huge moments and some big-time throws that you really, really like. And there are games, frankly, where he plays well. But they are sandwiched in and around a lot of bad decisions. But their offensive line is horrific. And I think that's where you would say Washington did such a better job than the Bears. We talked about the wide receivers and the weapons for Caleb Williams and saying, I think I went on record and saying that's the best situation any quarterback has ever had who was drafted number one overall. What I should have said was that's the best wide receiver and pass catching room or skill position room to throw the ball to hand the ball to, that a young quarterback has had. Because it's not like a crazy take. When you pick first, you're normally a 2-4 win team.
Yep.
That was the worst in the league. The only reason the Bears picked first was because of a trade that they made. They were not the worst team in the league. They weren't even close. They were almost a playoff team last year. They were effectively like a 9-win, 10-win type team on paper that needed a quarterback, that had an elite defense, that had massively improved at wide receiver, that had a good tight end and good running backs. What I did not properly account for was how horrendous their offensive line is. And that was a fear for Washington fans going into the season, was that the Commanders' O-line would be debilitating and hinder Daniels. And it hasn't. In fact, the opposite has happened.
The opposite.
Their line is good and it's elevated him. That has not happened for Caleb Williams. I also think it's true maybe that Daniels helps the O-line play better, whereas Williams makes the O-line worse.
Yeah, I don't think he's helping them.
You know, I think both of those things are true too. But that's been a big, big problem is the O-line play. And then Shane Waldron was just not a fit or a good hire, or I don't know how we got here, but that was a broken situation. So what's funny is Kingsbury interviewed for the Bears job. Kingsbury interviewed for the Raiders job. Kingsbury interviewed for the Washington job. Those three gigs.
Yep.
The Bears chose Shane Waldron, who they have since fired. The Raiders eventually settled on Luke Getsy, the former Bears OC, who they have already fired. And the Commanders ended up getting Cliff Kingsbury, which my hand is up.
My hand is up.
I was not giddy about. I thought, okay, let's see what happens. I don't hate the hire. He's a smart enough guy. But your boy was not thrilled. I wanted Kubiak. He was a, you know, second option, so to speak. But remember, he actually was taking the Raiders job at one point while we were at the Super Bowl. They had agreed that he was going to be the OC. The report was Kingsbury to the Raiders, and then something fell through, and he came to Washington. Think about how much the world would have changed if he went to the Raiders or the Bears, and Washington ends up with, say, Getsy or with Waldron. I mean, maybe we're having the Daniels-Williams conversation from the other perspective. Like, the idea that they landed Kingsbury, and Dan Quinn gets full credit for it.
100%.
And the staff that they built with basically four quarterback minds in the room. Kingsbury, Brian Johnson, who was the Eagles OC last year and play caller, Tavita Pritchard, who's their quarterback's coach, and then David Blau, who's the former Lions and Bears backup quarterback. Everything comes back to Chicago, it seems like. You know, those guys, though, Danny, you know, all being in the building, it's night and day the way the Commanders basically insulated their quarterback with coaching. We just kept looking at the wide receiver rooms and going, oh, man, Caleb Williams has it made. And there was so much more to it than that.
100%. It's the biggest evaluation mistake that I made looking at the process where I probably I underrated how great a fit Kingsbury was going to be because I didn't know, quite frankly. I mean, the data set of Kingsbury's career before Washington is Arizona, some incredible moments for half of a season, and then some flameouts, then an injury, and then okay.
Yeah, the Arizona tenure for Kingsbury is not how did we miss this? It was a very pedestrian offensive operation while he was there.
And some certainly runs of weeks at a time, 5, 6, 7, even 8, maybe 9 weeks when they would get off these rip-roaring starts where they were a juggernaut. But then you look at, you know, college coaching, and yes, some pretty prolific offensive numbers, but, you know, I don't know. Like, is this going? Are the adjustments made? Did he grow as an OC? Does he not know what he doesn't know yet, or whatever? And coaches can improve too. That's something that we've heard a million times from a million different coaches. Is you learn from some of your experiences what didn't work and can you apply it? I mean, Dan Quinn famously wanted a self-eval, right? Like, where did I go wrong in Atlanta? How can I be better at this? That mindset, I think, is kind of translated here to Kingsbury. You sort of mentioned it, the quarterback room that he surrounded. I think Anthony Lynn being part of the staff is old school smash mouth, run the ball this way, here's how, is a different departure than, what if we had 17 wide receivers? Can we try that? And it's a nice marriage that's happening.
Well, if you think about the best ways to help your young quarterback to get off to a fast start in their career, and just list them all, knowing what we know now, not what we thought before the season, having a solid offensive line probably at the top or near the top of that list.
Yes.
Advantage Washington, right? Having a coaching staff that is buying in total belief of you. And by the way, we haven't even talked about this. Matt Eberflus is going to get fired. They will have a new head coach who inherits Caleb Williams, and he's going to have to learn a second offense now in 2 years. Like, this is the old school Redskins playbook. This is the Dan Snyder era, how to screw up a quarterback in 500 pages playbook. And we're watching it play out while Washington's got the QB, where everything right now is 72 and sunny, and his career seems to be taking flight.
What I can't get over, because again, on paper, just thinking about this, what I can't get over is, to me, like, all the schemes and all the designs are one thing, but I'm going, when in doubt, you can just sort of throw it towards Odunze or Moore or Keenan Allen, and it'll make you right. Like, that security blanket to me was so valuable. Not to mention Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift, a good pass-catching running back. I thought Chicago's situation...
But those guys are never open.
And that's my point, is I thought that would overcome any... I mean, Eberflus, I'm going, what are you doing? That's a terrible dude to maintain and be in charge. He's already proven he can't do it. He's turned in bad work. Well, and now you're doing a retread. But I'm going, it'll be fine because of their personnel. Wrong.
I
just
saw
so
one
wrong.
Of my buddies in Chicago was asking the question on Twitter today. Like, who do you put the most blame on? And it was owner, team president, GM, head coach. I think that was the four, basically. And my first thought was, it's got to be the GM because he chose to keep Eberflus. Poles. But if that wasn't Poles' decision, then whoever dictated that he needed to, it's their fault. when you have the number one overall pick and you're getting a terrific prospect like Caleb Williams, the choice, if you wanted to go Drake May, Jaden Daniels, whatever direction they wanted to, obviously it was always Caleb Williams for them.
Mm-hmm.
Any offensive-minded coach on the planet that's not a head coach already would have taken that job. The reports back then were Ben Johnson wanted the Bears job, just as an example, and would have left and come over in the division. They stuck with Matt Eberflus, you know, basically like their Rivera, right? They stuck with their defensive-minded yep. Jag. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's not as if it's a Mike McDonald-type defensive coach either. It's not some genius that half the league is using his stuff. You know what I mean? Like, this was never the he rises above and is transcendent from the defensive potential limitations. Like, it looks like Dan Quinn has, to be honest with you. Dan Quinn, to me, is now I don't think of him as a defensive mind. I think of him as leader of men, get everyone to pull the rope in the same direction, and also a defensive mind. Whereas Eberflus...
Well, that's called that cologne of being 7-3.
Well, that's part of it.
You'd think about Eberflus that way, too, probably.
If they were 7-3? Well, if everybody was like almost cult-like and saying the exact same things in various interviews, yeah. We are a brotherhood. It is about brotherhood. We are here for each other.
I mean, the Falcons were doing all of that, too. While they had a pretty good offensive coordinator and had an MVP at quarterback. You know, it all kind of fell apart on the other side of that. Hopefully, that doesn't happen here. But back to the bigger conversation at hand... What is the biggest difference between the Commanders and the Bears and how they set these quarterbacks up? Obviously, Quinn deserves a ton of credit. Cliff Kingsbury just being hired is the win here, it seems like. Mm-hmm. That the marriage with him and Daniels has been flawless. Kingsbury deserves a ton of credit. But these are two organizations seemingly going in very different directions. Two quarterbacks in their careers taken 1 and 2. Going in very different directions at this moment. We can open up the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines for you to juxtapose the Commanders and the Bears with us. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on Grant and Danny.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Coming up in 30 minutes at 3 o'clock on Grant and Danny. Our fastest 16 minutes. We'll go around the NFL and look back at every game and all the big storylines from this weekend. The Bears have fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, today. They are not going to bench Caleb Williams, but apparently they considered it. So my two questions about all of this is, number one, why would you even think about benching Williams as you're falling out of playoff contention? It's time to develop your number one overall pick. But number two, why did they wait until today to do this? The game was Sunday. They made the announcement late Tuesday morning, essentially. Feels like a waste of time. It's not like they have a bye
week. To a degree, yeah. I wonder if they had like the deliberation. They're like, let's cool off Sunday night. Monday, we'll all come in and discuss it. And they probably discussed it all day. And then say, okay, now we're doing it Tuesday. Instead of just going, we got to hurry up.
So I guess that's my point, though, Danny. It was obvious, I think, to anybody who watched that game. Someone's mm-hmm. getting fired. It's maybe Eberflus, but that didn't happen because he did his Monday presser. And if it's not Eberflus, then it's got to be Waldron. Now, maybe they could have kept Shane Waldron and just stripped him of his duties, and that was the consideration. Does he want to stay on staff and not call plays? I just think whatever you're doing, you got to do it faster than taking
Agreed.
Sunday to now. I mean, we're talking about 48 hours ago.
Agreed, yeah.
But you only get 3 times that to prepare for the Packers.
It's
you've wasted 20% of your work week.
It's one of those things where I'm sometimes the impatience of the fan, like last year, for example, I'm sitting there going, and credit to the Harris ownership group, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I've already said that. I'm going, will you please just give me my pound of flesh? We all know Rivera's going to get let go. Just do it. Just jettison this thing into the sun. So just for my own sanity, just make me happy. Give me my pound of flesh. And they never did. So you're trying not to be a reactionary Randy. You're trying not to be the dude in section 410 as you're screaming from the heavens. But sometimes the people that are screaming who can see it clear as day are right too. Like this is one of those where you're going, if you're going to do this post game, thank you so much. Keep turning your key card in your Microsoft Surface.
I mean, they've been screaming since week one.
Yeah.
Week two, probably. They got this one right. It's like the people that, you know, think every single time Washington drafts someone, he's going to be a great player. And then, you know, the time that the player is great, that they're right, or vice versa. You know, every time, I'll joke on you a little bit. Every single time the Commanders play a game and they have a lead, and the other team gets any kind of a break or has
like a first down run for 4 yards.
Danny texts us and goes, "This loss is going to be so painful." And this week you were right.
Mm-hmm.
The previous four you weren't, but congratulations, you called your shot. When they were up 10, they lost to the Steelers. But the point of the dude's story is, I think it was pretty clear they had to make a change. It just seems like waiting until today was unnecessary. But I know how the work week goes in the NFL. Your first real practice is Wednesday anyway. Monday's the treatment day. So maybe they felt like there wasn't anything really lost in waiting until today. Let's go to Kevin in Centerville. We're taking a look from 10,000 feet up on Washington and Chicago, how they insulated their young quarterbacks, two teams that are going in different directions. What do you make of that?
Boys, happy Tuesday, first of all. I got two thoughts on this. The first is, and this is kind of in the spirit of Veterans Day having happened yesterday. In the military, there's a training expression where you say to embrace the suck. Sometimes there's things that you have to do in order to grow that are not fun. And Washington knows that all too well, that there are times you have to burn it down to the studs and just have a couple of really bad years before you can really try to make progress based on what's going on. Chicago, for many years, was in this pursuit of aggressive mediocrity. They were the most aggressively mediocre team in the NFL, where even in the years that they were down, they didn't lean into the tank the way that they should have in order to try to clean house and get everyone out. Now, of course, Washington, for the longest time, their rebuild didn't work because even though they burned it down to the studs, they were building over a sinkhole when Dan Snyder was here. So Snyder's gone. They rebuild this season, which is great because they did what they needed to do to try to clean house. The Bears do this cyclically where they hang on to either their coach or their offensive coordinator 1 year too long with a quarterback they're developing, refusing to fire them, and they've run into it again this season with the number one pick. The second thing I'll say is, the same way that I'm going to praise Washington, it's the most damning indictment of Chicago's system. When you draft a quarterback that has the type of athletic talent that these two guys have, you cannot try to force them to fit your system. They have to become your system. Washington has done such a good job with that with Jaden Daniels this year, where they've allowed the offense to be structured around his offensive skill set and not try to force a square peg into a round hole.
I think that's a great point.
Fantastic call.
Yeah, really good call. I will disagree with the last point. When I watch the Bears, I see Caleb Williams doing Caleb Williams things. I think for the most part, that offense has been catered to Caleb Williams. The good things he does are some of the good things he did in college. The bad things he does are trying to do the bad things he did in college, and it's just louder and worse and more embarrassing because now it's in the National Football League against better players and better defenses. But I don't think they're asking him to do anything he can't do. My issue with the offense they designed for him and that Waldron was running is there weren't enough layups. They did not do a very good job making things easy for him. The expected completion percentage on Jaden Daniels' passes this season is around 66%. The expected completion percentage on Caleb Williams' passes out of his hand this season, 62%. Doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is. I mean, if one guy's completing, you know, 62% and the other guy's at 66% just on the layups, basically, that's not anything better than what you should have done out of your hand. That's not you throwing the ball well. Just means Cliff Kingsbury, 4% of the time, gets Daniels an easier answer than Caleb Williams gets from Shane Waldron. That's a big deal.
It's a massive deal. When you start doing it over days and drives and then weeks and then months and then seasons, you end up with a giant gap between the two in terms of ease. So I would need somebody hardcore breaking down every concept and route tree and what each read was to know if it was designed for Caleb Williams' strengths or not. You know, some of it is Williams has certain proclivities. True. Is he also running for his life because the protection failed? Or is he missing? He's supposed to be a 5-step drop and he dropped back 10 steps. Like, I don't know what I don't know here. I do know that when you check him out, the offense doesn't look good. It looks like nobody's open and it looks like he's just sort of got to improvise and hope that something happens.
Here's the other possibility. And I think it's too early to say this and I don't actually think this yet. But it is absolutely possible that Jaden Daniels is just exceptional and Caleb Williams is not.
That's on the table.
It is very possible that despite what we thought pre-draft, despite what everyone ranked these quarterbacks to look like, that Jaden Daniels was actually the guy that if he was in Chicago, Matt Eberflus would be on his way to Coach of the Year. The Bears would be right there with the Lions in the NFC North. And if Caleb Williams was here, Kingsbury would be on the verge of getting fired, and we would think that Dan Quinn made a mistake. Like, that is also very, very possible, is that Caleb Williams just might not be that good. Now, I'm not ready to say that, and I don't actually think that's the case. I need a lot more time.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, like, I liked Drake May a ton. The Jaden Daniels-Caleb Williams debate was always interesting to me, because Daniels is just more prolific and dynamic as a runner and is a great passer. And the Williams style, that Mahomesian style that everyone loves, is not really for me as a prospect, because it tells me you need to be out of structure. And that has been the problem to me, is when he's in structure, he does not look like he can operate the offense as effectively as he needs to. Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville. What's up, Chris?
What's up, Grant? Yeah, I echo a lot of what you just said. And I, you know, because we had so much invested in the upcoming draft, I spent a lot of time looking at these guys. And it was clear that Williams excelled when he was able to go off script. But he had really terrible numbers by comparison in the pocket, and his sack rate was pretty bad compared to Daniels. And I feel like those were just conveniently overlooked because of the popularity, that former Heisman Trophy, and just his sort of Q rating. One thing I will say, though, is, like, I think the league or team should try to normalize benching players without it being punitive, and saying, like, hey, you're taking a break from, you're taking a step back to learn the game, learn the offense, and not continue to try to bang your head against the wall, which is what he's doing right now.
So I think that's an interesting point. It's just the perception is different than the reality there. I get what you're saying. It would be great to live in a world where you could bench a guy and it's not a referendum or an indictment that he's never going to be good, or that he's a bust, or that you don't think he's there right now. I think who you go to is different. Like, I don't feel like Anthony Richardson's done forever in Indianapolis. I've seen Lewis Riddick and some analysts to come out, and they're talking about the Colts' decision like they're a bunch of idiots, and how dare them, and what on earth are they thinking? And I'm a little surprised by that, because prior to actually getting the opportunity, Flacco had been really good this year, and Richardson had been really bad, and that's a playoff-caliber team. And everyone said he needed to sit, and now they're actually doing the thing where they're letting him sit and learn. This is different than that to me.
Uh-huh.
Number one, Flacco stunk, so they're going to bench him, and I'm sure go back to Richardson
right anyway.
But this is Tyson Bagent is the option. You're going to another young guy, their Heinicke. Like, absolutely not. Their folk hero in the fan base, their Tommy DeVito. That's not the way to go about it in Chicago, as far as I'm concerned. And you, it's hard to go backwards. Like, if you started Williams on the bench and then halfway through the year you go to him, and he's struggling, one thing. To start him, see him play poorly, and then bench him, to me, that's a whole different thing.
You're putting an obstacle where there wasn't one before. Yeah. I mean, the adversity is already there. Like, we're already stuck. We're already in a bad spot. I don't know that that makes it better. You're trying to dig your way out, and I don't know that that does that.
The Commanders do not have an OC problem or a quarterback problem. They have a Eagles problem 2 days from now, though, against a banged-up offensive operation. How do we feel about the game? About 48 hours away from being in Philadelphia broadcasting live. Let's talk about that next on Grant and Danny. Feels like the Commanders just got beat by the Steelers by a point. Now it's time to get ready for the Eagles. That's what happens on these short weeks. You don't think about it enough until you're in the middle of one. Like, I'm still tired from watching the Commanders-Steelers game. I'm not ready for Commanders-Eagles.
I know.
Can you imagine having been a player going through the car crashes?
No.
And what team's more physical than the Steelers up front? Imagine being Bobby Wagner or Frankie Louvu throwing your body around, or Johnny Newton, Fedarian Mathis, or somebody on that defensive line who down in and down out, Deron Payne is just slamming into guys, getting landed on, bottom of a pile of eight human beings, and your bumps and your bruises, and you can't walk upstairs on Monday night. You're sleeping on the couch in your living room, and you're getting ready to hop on a train and head on up to Philadelphia for a game tomorrow. You're traveling.
In general, I think Washington's schedule, I would say, did them some favors this year, right? I think on the whole,
no doubt,
positive.
They had the easiest travel of any team in the league in terms of miles traveled. It wasn't even close.
I think this is the cost. This week is paying the piper. Maybe a late bye week as well. But I mean, if you were to pick any, you know, of the how many teams they've played so far? 9 teams, because they played the Giants twice, right? Of the 9 teams that they've played, who would the worst team to play right before a Thursday night football game be? Probably Pittsburgh. Maybe Baltimore's a 1A, maybe, probably 2.
Oof.
I think Pittsburgh brings the wood a bit more.
The only reason I'd say the Baltimore is because you're probably losing the game, and so you're at risk of losing twice in 5 days. But I think what you're suggesting and getting at is the physical toll of playing a team.
Yeah, it's more like playing the 2005 Gibbs Redskins.
That's
like
the Steelers, and I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, I mean, just laying the wood, then it's like, okay, turn around and go run with Philadelphia. That is a tough ask. This is the gut check, all the rhetoric. Now it like rubber meets the road here.
So when the schedule came out originally, and it's hard to think back to the spring, but the night it comes out and they do some big show and they did the reveal, I think they were like cutting into cake or whatever they did this year. The part of the schedule right away that you look at and you go, uh-oh.
Yep.
The oh boy, like tug at your collar, go, yee.
Yeah, the danger field, right?
It's this week.
Yeah.
It's Steelers into Eagles, right? And it would have been even more the case if you're coming out of Eagles getting ready for the Cowboys at home. But without Dak Prescott, and now with either Cooper Rush or Trey Lance, both of whom are not starters in this league, they're going to absolutely destroy the Cowboys.
Yeah, so before the season started, again, because this is the beauty and also the reminder, no one should be predicting anybody's record or win-lose games in the springtime, because did you have them not playing Dak Prescott and Dallas having imploded to that degree? A team that's won 12 games a year, 3 straight seasons? You thought they'd be one of the worst teams in the NFL? You knew that then? You didn't know.
They're now going to sweep Dallas.
Yeah.
By the way, I cannot wait for a home date with a Trey Lance-led Cowboys team and Washington winning that game 33-3. That is going to be awesome.
So, but before the season started, I went, hey, let's look at November. Giants, who they historically have tons of trouble with, and they won by a score, eked that one out, but that Giants, Steelers, Eagles, Cowboys, so that's going to determine their season, right? If they're hovering around 500, if they're okay, if they're, 4-6, whatever, kind of in that range, they win a couple of those games, hey, we could sniff postseason. Obviously, now it's gone way differently than nearly everybody thought, outside of a few homers, but that stretch no longer is the exact same, but this little two-piece, this is tough. This ain't easy.
I was just thinking about it today. They just played. They're getting ready to travel tomorrow, let alone preparing and game planning and walkthroughs and practices. I'm not ready for the game.
I'm not ready.
I didn't do anything. I sat in the press box and I ate a hot dog. My guy, Bobby Wagner, playing 70 snaps, getting into 55 collisions. How's he feeling right now? Was not that different than me in terms of age. I mean, a couple of years,
Yeah.
He's in slightly better shape.
He's
than
in better condition than that. Don't beat yourself up on that one.
I think I should beat myself up on my condition, but not because it's not Bobby Wagner.
Well, yeah, like Bobby Wagner's in better shape than you. I think that's okay to say. He's a pro athlete.
Is he definitively in better shape than
Yes. I think I feel comfortable saying that. That's no disrespect to you. It's Bobby Wagner. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Now, you're in the Hall of Fame, but for something totally different.
Bobby Wagner, NFL linebacker. Me.
Yeah. Now, you're in the King George Hall of Fame.
Right?
He's not.
Very
so
different.
Do you have that over Bobby Wagner?
There's a Hall of Famer.
There goes a Hall of Famer. Bruce runs away.
I was at the Caps game over the weekend. They played the Penguins on Friday night. I went with our buddy Barstool Nate. We're sitting... Great seats, by the way. Went with him. He had awesome seats. And we're sitting down, and the guy right behind me, who has a very Australian voice because he's from Australia.
Okay.
It's like, you could do it better than I could. But he's like, hey, mate, is that you? Are you Grant? You know,
my God, are you Grant over there?
Yeah.
Look at that.
And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? He's like, huge listener every day from Australia. And he listens on the Odyssey app, like, every single day. He lived here at one point about a decade ago. And he was here visiting with his buddies, and he was at the game. And we talked throughout the whole night. Could have been a cooler guy. In fact, if I ever go to Australia, and let me be clear,
yeah,
Obama style, what? I will not be going to Australia until I can teleport there, or it doesn't take 17 hours of flying to get there.
Now, Australia looks beautiful, but they take everything that can kill you and go and ramp that bad boy up.
They do. I'm less worried about that than you
are. That's
all
I can think about.
I like the beautiful, and I like the kangaroos, and I want to hold a little baby Joey.
You mean the Joey?
Yeah, I want to hold the little baby Joey and smooch its little face and, smooch its little, like little toes and see how he bounces around and whatever else. I'm going to go to Australia one day when I can get there without flying for 17 hours. But if I go there, I'm actually going to look this guy up. He was a cool dude. I liked him. got his email. We've been in mm-hmm. touch, right? The point of bringing this up is he's like, you know what, Pete, you're going to bring back on the show? He's like, you guys don't talk about that as a Hall of Famer anymore. I was like, well, it wasn't like a weekly thing. You know, Danny made the Hall of Fame. It was a thing. I made the Hall of Fame. It was a thing.
Yeah.
But he says how whenever he sees people in his life, that like instead of saying like, oh, what's up, sport? He's like, there's a Hall
of
Fame.
He goes, that guy's a Hall of Famer. Look at it. That's great. Yeah. That's a good bit. Is he related to Nathan Walker, former Australian Capital?
Nathan Walker. Eagles defense is good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're up on this, people.
Yeah, it's annoying.
They have turned a corner. They are top 10 in the NFL now. You know who's a great coordinator? Vic Fangio. Everywhere he goes, the defenses suddenly just mysteriously get
a
lot better.
It's funny.
I wonder how much of it is them just not playing anyone lately.
They've had a soft month or so.
Their quarterback schedule, as they have climbed the standings and shut everybody down, has been pretty awful. Cooper Rush, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Daniel Jones. I think the only tough game against the Bengals and Joe Burrow. But more on that matchup with Philly's defense coming up as the show goes on. Let's go around the NFL next. Our fastest 16 minutes. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.